So His Holiness Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Maharaj, he appeared in Cleveland, America, materially speaking, and later became a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And you could say he is one of our most, one of the most dear gurus, Srila Prabhupada, who made this world a little bit brighter, especially by his preaching, his showing mercy to so many fallen souls, among them also to myself. So I can explain my small personal experience. I was very fortunate to come across His Holiness. It was in year 2000 in a Croatia summer camp. And at that time, you know, being a young devotee, more kind of curious, what is bhakti yoga, than really kind of devotee. It was a summer camp in Tashalerna, like a spiritual summer camp. I'm sure many of you have been there, correct? You remember the summer camps in Croatia? Yes? Yeah. So my first experiences with bhakti yoga at the time were very simple. I would just camp in a tent right in front of the big tent, which was a temple room, and in the morning I would wake up by the sound of Mangalarati. Of course, you know what's Mangalarati. Open the tent, and there I was, you know, in a tent, from small tent to big tent, next door, not even taking shower or any concerns of any cleanliness, whatever. And yes, there were many gurus, and who is this mysterious guru, you know, looks like coming from Africa, and speaking so nicely and reaching right to my heart. That time I had many problems, as usually material world is a place of problems. And it just, how we say, hit the nail, you know. It was my first experience. Yeah, what to say. And then very soon I was fortunate enough to hear his classes. He would give a lot of stress to building of Vaishnava communities, a lot of stress on working on our relationships, not just with our partners, friends, but especially among devotees as a members of community, and protection of children and women in Krishna consciousness. So he was, I would say, very much in front of time for that period. Therefore, sometimes he's been even misunderstood, maybe even by some of his god brothers, god sisters. So he was very advanced, and not sometimes when you're doing something very revolutionary, you might not be accepted so easily by everybody. But his legacy is there. He founded the IFEST, so the Institute for Applied Spiritual Technology, or IFEST acronym, where the idea was, he was very expert in how to digest this spiritual knowledge like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and so on, and make it very easy to accept, very digestible for people of all walks of life, especially for professionals, who they said personally they would never maybe say yes to Krishna consciousness, but because it was presented in such a way, in such a time, place, circumstance, right way, as in through some seminars or through his books. Gurudev wrote many books, and they were very easy to digest, and they were written really for a wide range of public, no matter from what background people are coming, whether they were religious, not religious, or even for other religions. And it was written in a very, very non-sectarian way, in a kind of neutral way, so that everybody could reach to this essence. Somebody might say, you know, bridge preaching or whatever way you want to take it, but it's really special. And many high, well-paid professionals, they joined because of Gurudev, of course, also of course of Prabhupada, bringing all this knowledge to the West. But it was Gurudev who knew how to touch their hearts, how to bring them closer to Krishna consciousness and make them say yes. Well, I would like to show a few videos and then maybe also comment later. All right? That's okay? Yeah. Thank you very much.
And then we can start a discussion. Probably most of us are affected with His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, and he inspired and encouraged us in our service. So it will be great that we open a little brief discussion after these short videos, so that we can somehow invite Bhaktivedanta Maharaj in our hearts and mind, and that we can associate with him in that way and ask him for his blessing and mercy, so that we can be in his mission followers and take shelter at his lotus feet. Thank you.
So Krishna consciousness is somewhat different in that it gives mankind the oldest spiritual scriptures on the entire planet.
Hare Krishna. So I would like to summarize a little bit. You could see how Gurudev is basically giving a talk on, you could say, interfaith approach, how to sum up the essence. So he is mentioning different religions and everything. And of course, if you compare each of them separately, you might say, okay, these are differences, these are different differences. But no, you take the common thing. So he took the common thing of chanting the holy names, and he mentioned different scriptures from Quran, Bible, and so on. And he brought this essence of, he brought forward this essence of calling the Lord's holy names. And so this always, the idea is, what's the common ground? What's the comment about all the spiritual traditions around the world, and he presented them. So if I'm correct, so this talk was given in Nairobi, that's in Kenya, and as you know, in Africa there used to be apartheid. It's like this racial discrimination, and even to have, you know, like black people and white people together, and especially doing some spiritual things, projects, it's like unheard of. And now he gave this strong point of showing, taking that political leader and showing immediately, you see these people from all over the world, his white boy, black boy, and so on. And they're working together, and there's no this discrimination. So that pointing out that solution to all these problems, which are still up till today to some degree present in Africa, you know, this racism and so on. The solution is the common ground of Krishna consciousness, the common ground of consciousness, where everybody understands that he no longer belongs to any particular denomination, any particular race, any particular color of body, and so on. But he's a devotee of the Lord. He's a servant of the God. Yeah? So this was a very powerful speech. So you got some glimpse of His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj's classes.
First of all, ask you, Your Grace, this is not your first visit to Sierra Leone. So why are you here now?
I'm here. I'm completing a world tour. I left my headquarters in Washington last year, and I'm visiting many of the West African countries, and then I'll be going on to India in about a month, and then back to U.S. My visit is mainly about a fourfold purpose. First, I'm visiting with many other religious leaders. Second, I'm having a chance to give many lectures in some of the universities, some of the metaphysical organizations. I'm having also a chance to meet many of the political and academic leaders of each country. We're constantly trying to emphasize how people can play a greater role in nation building from a spiritual perspective, and how to address some of the national and world order problems that is facing humankind at this time. And of course, my duty as a Swami, as a guru, I'm visiting many of our own monasteries, trying to see how our devotees are doing, if our priests and priestesses are being faithful, you know, to the mission that they're responsible for, to see how they're extending themselves to help people to know more that God is about love and peace. And also to see what role they're playing in some of the social welfare concerns, you know, of each country.
I see you were born John Favors. You don't use that name anymore?
I use the name. I just said I have many names because my background is very diversified. You know, I'm a psychologist, I'm an academician, I'm a scholar of international law, as well as a priest. So according to what environment I'm in, then people call me a different name. I'm also, as you said, an African chief in some of the African countries. So all of these names are just part of some small categorizations.
Yeah, Chris, you were born into a God-fearing family in the United States of America. And in fact, as a child, you appeared on television to preach Christianity. Now, how come you are now in the Hare Krishna religion?
I think that is the reason. My life has always been about trying to serve God in a deeper perspective. So if we look close, we can see sometimes there's a difference between what the prophets taught and did, and often what people have construed or interpreted. So one thing very special about the Hare Krishna teachings is that we follow what is called the Vedic teachings. The Vedas is known by historians, by linguists and philosophers as some of the oldest spiritual scriptures on the entire planet. They were written far before the Bible, the Quran, and the Torah. And they are many times more encyclopedic. It says many of the questions you opened up with are very distinctly clarified in the Vedic teachings. The Krishna conscious movement explains very thoroughly about life after death. It gives tremendous information about life on other planets. It helps a person to see how there is one God. See, you may call God, or I may call God, or other people, we may have different names. Some people, according to their religious tradition, they refer to God as Allah, or Yahweh, or Jehovah, or as we do as Krishna. But it's the same one God. If we look around the world, most religious practitioners practice their religion as if God is only for them. Now God, being the father of everyone, being most holistic, cannot really be appreciated from a myopic or from a sectarian perspective. If we're trying to understand God deeply, we also have to be more wholesome. For the Krishna teachings help us to appreciate all the bona fide prophets and to see how they came according to different time, place, and circumstances, but how they are representing the same God. So people all over the world, we have millions and millions of followers. In every continent, in every race, almost every tribe, and we have people who are Christians, ministers, bishops, imams, metaphysicians from many different systems, who particularly take shelter of some of our teachings and sometimes join us as full-time priests themselves because they are very excited by the depth of philosophical understandings that they can acquire from studying, you know, with us.
So you can see here again, some points came again about interfaith, about finding the common essence of all religion, about chanting the Lord's holy name, about glorifying the Lord by His name. And his, how to say, very eclectic view on everything. He could draw a point from any religion, any, how to say, different philosophy point of view, and bring the essence, bring forth the essence so that people would say, yes, it's true. This makes sense. It doesn't seem controversial. I can accept that. Despite, you know, there might be different people from different religions or different opinions or whatever they might be. But he always find this common ground, this essence, this point, how to bring through this Krishna consciousness. Basically, to simplify it, how to pack Krishna consciousness in such a digestible way that people could accept it and digest it easily and say yes to Krishna. Okay. So he was also very keen of kirtan, and see it for yourself. As you can see, the pictures and movie tells everything. And there were like two occasions, like once it was in Mayapur, and Gurudev was leading Mangalarati. And there was, of course, Mangalarati, you have a little bit of kirtan also, Mangalarati. And this kirtan extended also till Singapore, and extended till Tulsi Puja. And there was a time for japa, but the kirtan was still going on. And then the period, end of japa, time for Prabhupada Puja was there, but no, kirtan was still going on. It was time for class. No, kirtan was still going on. And so how long was it going? And then it was time for breakfast prasadam. And of course, some went for breakfast prasadam, but the kirtan was still going on. So from Mangalarati to breakfast prasadam and continuing. And many times was like this. So the point is that if Gurudev would give kirtan, you probably wouldn't be able to just stand still there like a stone statue and just watch. You just had to take part in it, you know. And these kirtans were many times very, very, very long, wild, and ecstatic, of course. as you can see, Gurudev would also use very much, how would I say, his attire. Yeah? As he introduced himself in one of those lectures, which we just heard, he was also a chieftain in Africa. So his... Later he got the mission that to go and preach in Africa, naturally having a African body, it's much adventurous to preach to Africans. They would take care of his own. And being very, very skillful, he made many alliances, he made many, he preached to many politicians, many important persons and so on. And so much so that in Nigeria, for example, they also made him king of the tribe Wari. Yeah. Now, to preach in Africa, at least West Africa, like Nigeria places, it's not an easy thing because many times, as you become a spiritual leader or so, many people become envious. That means they do all kinds of black magic and all kinds of other things and political intrigues, and so many times he had to basically run for his life, so to speak, and try to kill him and so on, so on. It's not, Africa is already a difficult place, but what to speak to, you know, when you have to deal with this power and with such people, some who are wealthy, influential and so on, and many are envious, and then they want to basically kill you. So he was very successful in African preaching. Africa was a hard nut for many, many years, and still is, for preaching. But then when His Holiness Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj started to preach also in Africa, it kind of opened up, and many, many devotees from Africa also came forward. So maybe, as you saw that Gurudev likes that drum, he's very in favor of that drum. He likes to play that drum on the kirtans. And no way that his attire would stay dry. So he would give it all, you know, just full power and go for hours and hours and hours, literally. And it's no way you can do this from a material point of view, only if you have some spiritual energy, some strong desire to dance for the Lord and sing for the Lord.
Actually, I'm very, very grateful and to Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, because he actually helped me, and actually through his books I came to this process. He was a psychologist, and he has very, very attractive style of writing. And actually, I came a little bit later when he already passed away, but through his literally transcendental personalism, which he is spreading through his books and also his disciples, I was very attracted to the process and inspired so much. So once I told to one of his disciples that actually he is my spiritual master. And she told me, but it's not possible because he already left the body. He passed away. It's not possible. So I told her, so if he cannot be my spiritual master, then no one will, because I only love him. And then she said, then please, please deeply pray to Bhaktisiddhanta Swami so that he can show you who is your spiritual master. So I was really praying very profound, because I couldn't believe that I will ever find anybody else except of him. But then he sent me his best friend. So his best friend became my spiritual master. And I always, whenever I try to approach to my spiritual master, it's not possible without help or assistance or blessings of his disciples. So it's really, yeah, I received a recommendation from his disciple. She introduced me to my spiritual master, and then I really felt his blessings. And then when I left to went to Shida Mayapur to study Bhakti Shastri there, so I was going to his samadhi and also reciting shlokas and whatever in front of his samadhis. And one day I told him, okay, I start with your books, but now I'm here. So can you please guide me where to go, what to do? Can you please tell me how can I serve you? So then I went to temple, to the Guru Puja in Mayapur, and then I saw one Croatian devotee who is my friend. And she told me, you know this Raja Lila, she is first disciple of His Holiness Bhaktisiddhanta Swami. She wants to meet you. I was just came from samadhi, and I asked for his instruction to guide me. And I asked her how she knows me. I know her, and I want to meet her, but I don't know how she knows me. She said, somehow I mentioned something about what are you doing, and she expressed her willingness to meet you. So I was really blessed to really have a lot of her association, and through her association, I also associate with His Holiness Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. And actually, that also happened to me, because that was my first time to travel to India, and I was traveling alone, so I forgot my japa from initiation, my beads in the plane. So I was really desperate and very terrified, and I didn't know what to do, how to chant now, and yes, what I can do. So when I came, I saw one servant of my Guru Maharaj, and I asked if he can give another japa to Guru Maharaj to chant again. But this devotee, he said, you know, there is 40 japas waiting again to Maharaj to chant for you, and Maharaj is very angry, and I'm not sure whether he is going to do so. So I said, okay. And I was really still really so sad, but I told to Vraja Lila what happened to me, and she said, no worries. You please prepare your new japa, give it to me, and I will personally give to your spiritual master to chant again. So I did that. And then she said, suddenly, I need to go, I need to travel because, yes, I need to go to this Govardhan Eco Village because some delegation from Washington came, and I need to assist to your Guru Maharaj with them. So I said, okay. But she said, first I need to go to Bombay Bhaktivedanta Hospital because she had some health issue with the knee. So she stuck in that hospital, and he was really in a wheelchair. She was very ill because of some injection. She couldn't, her body couldn't accept it well. So she was really bad, and she was not able to proceed to Govardhan Eco Village. So she said, I said, okay, no problem, don't think about this japa. She said, no worry, I'm in pain, I'm here, but I will manage somehow. And I was really ashamed, like that she thinking on me in that condition. But then after a while, I was just asking how is she feeling and what's going on. She said, I'm in a huge pain, but I'm very happy because Jagannath is coming every morning. They are bringing Jagannath to visit these patients here. And it was really amazing. I'm so grateful. And I have sent your japa to Chaupati. So my husband took. And then, he gave to your Guru Maharaj. He chanted in front of Radha Gopinath. And now he gave it back, so I will send it to you. I was like, oh my God. It was really so amazing. First, that she showed me by her own example, how she's always willing to serve and sacrifice no matter what condition she's going through. And this is exactly mood of His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Swami. He is very profound. He is very mystical. He is always mystically present. Whoever wants to get his association, he can get that through his lectures, through his books, wonderful books, through his disciples. He is very, very mystically present, and he teaching us how to develop very healthy, profound spiritual community, how to become real spiritual warrior. He also teach us, and through his wonderful book Beggars, four parts of Beggars, or six, maybe even six warriors, and leadership. They are really wonderful and amazing books that you can really bring it everywhere you go. And Maharaj was really creative in his preaching. He was visiting universities in the most difficult time. He was very convincing, and he was so capable to convince all these arrogant academics, and also distributed book at the different of universities, in the jails. He was also very, very caring. Everyone who knows him, he can approve that he was so transcendentally personal. He was always eager to hear about how devotees are going through this process, how someone is feeling, how everything, how is situated spiritually, materially, if anyone can be able to help, if someone needs help. And he's so inspiring. He's always like here with us. And yes, he said when he was here that after he leave this planet, that he will be even more present through his books and through his lectures. And I do strongly believe in that. And I really try to pray to Maharaj and to all his disciples to shower me with his blessing so that I can be instrument in his hand, because I know that, he's the greatest spiritual warrior in Srila Prabhupada's army, and that, yes, he's helping us and he's guiding us. Whoever like to take his shelter and guidance, he is always here. He is so present. He is so mystically, transcendentally present. And I'm forever grateful to him and his disciples. Yes. Yeah, Bhaktivedanta Maharaj Ki Jai.
Hare Krishna. I just remember, maybe I could share with you few anecdote pastimes that I heard from his godbrothers. So one was he was told by Srila Prabhupada, when Prabhupada was very, very, very happy, very, very pleased with him when he was distributing so many books. You know, he was also in this Radha Damodar traveling party. And Adho Gadbal say it wasn't so easy to, you know, distribute books with him because he was so stare. He chanted so many rounds and he ate only very little, just some fruits, some nuts, and he was always, I would say, very full of Krishna consciousness. And of course, Hankirtan results were excellent. But it was so intense. And then one day he was asked by Srila Prabhupada to come to his room. At that time he was still Brahmachari, Ganeshyam. Ganeshyam was his initiating name. And Prabhupada said, come closer, come closer. And of course Gurudev was humble and he came a little bit closer to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, come closer, come closer. And in the end, he would come right in front of Prabhupada and Prabhupada would hug him and say, your life is perfect, you will see Krishna in this life. Yeah? So how the story goes next? As he was in Jagannath Puri, you know, state of Orissa, India, the famous Lord Jagannath temple, where unfortunately not all the Vaishnavas are allowed to go and to have darshan of Lord Jagannath, and not to speak of somebody having, you know, African body, externally, of course. And then what he has done? Well, he dressed in a kind of a karmi dress, jeans and things like that, and he managed to sneak in across this, passed by this pandas, this, you know, this is a kind of so-called spiritual security guards, you know, like people who will give you hell if they found out that you're not 100% pure Hindu, and only Hindu can go inside the Jagannath temple. Vaishnavas may be allowed, not allowed, but Hindu can go to see. Alright, so if you're not Hindu, beware, they will cane you with sticks, you know, they will just beat you, they give you hell. And then he was, suddenly one of the pandas came to him and, you know, said to other pandas, no, he's mine, like, you know, okay, I'll take care of him. Because pandas, they like to ask for donation or they give you trouble or something like that. And there he was. So Gurudev was kind of afraid, what now? And then he took him right in front of Lord Jagannath, the huge deity of Lord Jagannath, you know, of Jagannath Puri. Of course, Lord is present everywhere, but still. And, you know, like to bow down right at his lotus feet and touch the feet of the deities. And Maharaj was surprised, and then he gave him some Mahaprasad, and it's very, very special. And in the end, he took him aside and spoke in English, I know who you are. You know, there was one of the pandas who was sympathizing with ISKCON, who knew that we should also be allowed to have darshan of Lord Jagannath, you know. And that there he had his darshan, he saw the Lord in his life, in this very life. And then he tried the next day again, but it didn't work, so he had to run. This was one experience. And Krishna Kshetra Prabhu would, Krishna Kshetra Maharaj would explain, he was going with him for Sankirtan to Eastern Germany universities. You know, at that time, as you know, was still East and West German bloc. So it was preaching behind the Iron Curtain, if you know what I mean. At that time, there was so much Soviet influence. Well, it looks like some stories are coming again, only Soviet and West and everything. But nevertheless, preaching something religious, you know, at that time was like you were committing suicide. It's like basically you're begging KGB, you're begging secret police, you're begging whoever to put you in jail, you know. And then they were wearing artificial hair called wig, you know, a wig, you know, you put your, and they were disguised, they were dressed like, you know, something. And they came to university in, East Germany, and there was one professor and so on and so on. And he said, oh, yes, you're looking for such and such, professor of something, history or something. Yes, just wait here this way, you know, wait this. And, of course, he dubbed them in, and he called the security police something. And there, So there are two koshas. One was this one with Krishna Kshetra, Datam Prabhu, and they would eventually catch them, and then Maharaj would know the way how to get out of the, no matter how difficult situation. I'm like, oh, I'm very sorry, we didn't know, and such, and this and that. And they would just let them, he would smile, you know, and like beaming, and they would let them go eventually, just like that. And the other story was, he was also on one of the universities, and he heard the footsteps behind him, and he was walking faster, and that guard or whatever policeman was, he started walking faster, and then he would run, and that person would run behind him, and they would start chasing in the school, and then suddenly he would just open one door and get in, and you know, like run away. And then there was professor and said, yes, can I help you? Who you are? And he would immediately find his way. He said, yeah, I'm such and such. I have appointment with you. Oh, the secretary didn't tell you. And these are the books and so and so. And he would get the standing order for Srimad Bhagavatam. That means, standing order means the books were not yet printed, but, they would make a place an order. And as the books were printed, they would send them through mail, you know. And imagine, at that time, being East Germany, having an African body, was like, they could see you from aircraft, so to speak, you know, like, how many Africans were at that time in Eastern Germany? and you're preaching this Krishna consciousness and distributing books, which is prohibited books, you know, in Eastern Bloc. So, this is one of the best time. Would somebody like to add something? Oh, yes, please.
I don't know if you spoke about how he distributed books in Yugoslavia. So there, he was coming, I think he came once in 75 or 6. At that time I was 15 years old. And I heard from Krishna Kshetra or some other devotees how he came first to Ljubljana. I don't know if you are aware that books Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita set, which is in library in Ljubljana, it was distributed by Maharaj. Then he went to Zagreb, also to library, and then he distributed. He gave them also set, then to Belgrade also. So in all main cities in Yugoslavia, he went first to library, and then he presented like philosophy and books, and then he gave to all the libraries. I'm not sure about Sarajevo. You can find out, but I know Ljubljana, Zagreb, and Belgrade. So there are also some things how he lived at that time. He was a few days in Zagreb, and he didn't want to eat anything else than raw vegetables. I know that he went to vegetable market, and then he actually begged these old ladies who were distributing, please can you give me some carrot or some salad or some apples, and then he collected these donations, but and then he ate this raw food. He was only eating raw food, whatever was given to him by the ladies there. I know the place where he begged, because Krishna Kshetra told me that there was one, in Zagreb there is one British square. I lived there when I was in Zagreb, living in Zagreb. I lived maybe a few hundred meters from this British square. The name is British Square. So there is still today this vegetable market, and on this place he begged actually vegetables. So if you have time, I have some few maybe stories, which when I met him personally a few times, few occasions. Once was in Mayapur, I think it was maybe 84, 85. There was I don't know if you are aware that he was the first black Swami who took in his sannyas. And then it was like he was known as and as Ganesham, but then he took sannyas, and then devotees were like, he was always effulgence. He was known as Black Swami. He always wear this funny African hat. This was his like image. Also with danda, with danda and this cap, hat. It was really like not funny, but unusual that Swamis wear dandas and this African hat. But this was his mood. And actually, in Mayapur, devotees were eager to associate with him, and he liked it. They liked their kirtan, because as you explained, sometimes they were like 1 or 2 hours. And I remember one occasion in the front of the temple, old temple, he took karatals and he started the kirtan. And devotees gathered more and more, and then was like after half an hour, it was like already huge kirtan. But he, all the time he was holding his danda under his hand, like playing karata in his hand. And then I saw that actually this danda is on the way. He wanted to dance and play more loudly, more ecstatically, but then I like approached him and I showed him like in the, I didn't say anything, but I, with my eyes and my mind, I like told him, can I help you to hold your danda? And he captured my mind. He understood. And he said, he didn't say anything. He was chanting, but he gave me danda like that. Then I took his danda and to keep in the keep, and then he started to dance and in circle and all the ecstatic kirtan. He was completely like in ecstasy, and all kirtan was like roaring. And after some time, he came, when everything stops, he came to me and said, what is your name? And I said, Dananjaya. Where do you come from? And I said, from Yugoslavia. Oh, Yugoslavia, oh, very nice place. I distributed those books, and we talked for a few minutes. And then he said, he embraced me. He said, what is the goal of our life? And I said, to serve Krishna. Yes. He said, yes. But more important is to fall in love with Radha and Krishna. Fall in love and enter their pastimes. Not only serving. You have to love, fall in love with Radha and Krishna and enter the pastimes. And I was like completely shocked, because that time ISKCON was still like serve Krishna and Radha Krishna is far away. But he was like somehow in this mood. And then in one other, actually devotees, he was known as the person who was preaching is in Africa, and he also preached in Geneva. I remember that he went to Geneva to this, how is it in English, United Nations. There was a meeting of United Nations, but all the presidents of different countries were there meeting, and he went there in the dhoti and kurta and this hat, and he was preaching there to these presidents. He was in Mayapur. They were saying, this is the Swami who preached to United Nations, to all the leaders of the world. So I remember now one other occasion when I was living in France. This was in 1996, actually. The devotees from Switzerland, they, because the land in Switzerland is very expensive, so they bought the farm just across the border, maybe 50 kilometers from the border in France. So this was the farm of the Swiss yatras, Swiss devotees in France. It was big land, and they developed their temple and all this. And once I lived there for half a year, and once he came with some devotees with car to visit the farm and to see how it is developing. So he was going around, we went around the farm to this project, and he was like, he was limping, and then Guru Shakti, that was then president, he said, Maharaj, can we, maybe we can slow down because you are limping. He said, yes, I have something something is bothering me in my foot. Something is wrong, and I said immediately, "Please, can I see what? Maybe I can fix your." He has sandal natikache. Sandals. I said, "Mahar, maybe I can fix it. Let me see." And he said, "Okay." Then I took his sandal, and I touched patch inside, and I saw there was one piece of wire. Something was like sticking out. And I said, "I can fix it." Then I went to workshop, and I took the hammer, and started to beat this wire, and then somehow it was only way to fix it. I beat it, and it was like, it bangs, and it was not. And I touched again with my fingers; it was like smooth again. Then I went back. And I said, "Now it's fixed. You can try it. It will not bother you anymore." And then he put his foot and he said, "Yes, okay, very nice. Thank you very much. Thank you very much." And he said, "What is your name?" I said, "Dhananjaya Das." Sorry. And he said, "Yes, I remember. You are from Yugoslavia." And I couldn't believe that he remembered this in 85 in Mayapur. He remembered that I am from Yugoslavia. He was so personal. After so many years, this is like almost 10 years, more than 10 years, he remembered that I am from Yugoslavia. But and then he said, "But now, this former Yugoslavia, now it's not anymore." So he said, yes, but thank you. I said, "Thank you very much." And I said, no, I thank you. You fixed my shoes. I thank you. He was so humble, and you could not imagine that... how to say, such a exalted soul, it's so humble. This is actually two occasions. In Mayapur, I was doing Sankirtan many years, so I had always the money and always sneaked to Mayapur festival. So I remember it from Mayapur, but two personal contact was these two stories. But he came in Zagreb later, right? I'm not sure. Maybe you know if he came to Zagreb. I left Croatia in 88, but I think he came to Zagreb sometimes. I'm not sure exactly when. Didn't have so much contact. Anyway, great souls are very rare in this world. So he was one of them. Okay, Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. Somebody else? Any like to add something?
Short. This is really amazing meditation. It's from his book Beggar, but it's in Croatian meditation, but I do believe that audience on the internet can also understand. I would like to read, because it's really amazing, and he's not with us right now, but he still is. And this meditation is from his book, okay, Arshad, Prosjak 4, četvrti dio njegove serije knjiga Prosjaci. Meditaciju sam otvorila šestu i on kaže, nazvao je Oprostili smo se da bismo se povezali na dubljoj razini. Kaže, kada pozdravljamo neku osobu, poštujemo njezinu prisutnost i cijenimo njezino postojanje u odnosu na naše, primamo je u svoju zbilju. Kada nekoj osobi kažemo s Bogom, obično činimo upravo suprotno, odvajamo se od nje i ona se odvaja od nas. Opraštanje znači formalno pristati na promjenu odnosa, napustiti sredinu i poštovati odlazak druge osobe. Saznavši da bolujem od uznapredovalog malenoma i da mi je po svemu sudeći preostalo svega 6 mjeseci života, počeo sam razmišljati o svim osobama u svome životu od kojih sam se želio oprostiti. No jesam li se uistinu želio od njih jesam li želio njih otpustiti od sebe, jesam li ja bio spreman otpustiti sebe od njih? Kao da sam umjesto toga želio biti prisutniji u njihovom životu i da oni isto tako budu prisutni u mom. Članovi moje biološke obitelji nazivali su me nekoliko puta izrazili svoje misli i molitve pune ljubavi. Kasnije su me brat i sestra posjetili na nekoliko dana. Zajedno smo se smijali i plakali, prisjećali se mnogih, svima dragih zajedničkih uspomena, naročito naše preminule majke koja je bila duboko duhovna i sve nas je ljubavno nadahnula. Tijekom zajedničkih molitvi i razgovora, kao da smo osjetili njenu prisutnost, brati i sestre duboko su se međusobno povezali, a zatim usmjerili svoju zajedničku pažnju i privrženost prema meni. Znali su da smo najvjerovatnije posljednji put zajedno, pa smo bili zahvalni za svaki trenutak. Kao da smo po prvi put osjećali međusobnu milinu i ljubav. Razmišljao sam kako je prekrasno što mi je Krišna dao takvu raznoliku, dražesnu i duhovnu biološku obitelj. Ja sam najmlađe dijete i obitelj s još dva brata i četiri sestre. To me naravno okružilo pažnjom i ljubavlju koju bi se moglo nadati razmaženo najmlađe dijete. Iako smo se oprostili, zapravo smo se željeli povezati na dubljoj razini, ne željeći se uistinu rastati. Pitao sam se zašto ne može uvijek biti tako. Nazvali su me mnogi stari prijatelji s kojima sam odrastao. S nekima se nisam čuo godinama. Saznali su da ću možda uskoro napustiti tijelo, pa su se prisjetili našeg prijašnjeg druženja. Razgovarali smo o tome i koliko značimo jedni drugima, koliko smo jedni od drugih naučili, koliko smo pomogli jedni drugima i koliko ćemo se nedostajati. Kao da smo po prvi put otkrivali međusobnu milinu i ljubav. Zajedno smo se smijali i plakali. Iako smo se oprostili, zapravo smo se željeli povezati na dubljoj razini, ne želeći se uistinu rastati. Pitao sam se zašto ne može uvijek biti tako. Primio sam posjete i pozive od braća i sestara po Bogu iz čitavog svijeta. Bilo je prekrasno. Prisjećali smo se zabava svoga gurua i zajedničkog propovijedanja. Potanko smo se prisjećali sukoba i problema s kojima smo se susretali. Dijelili smo spoznaje i duboko uvažavanje koje osjećamo jedni prema drugima. Zajedno smo se smijali i plakali u razmjenama koje su bile iznimno moćne, slatke i pune ljubavi. Kao da smo po prvi put otkrivali međusobnu milinu i ljubav. Razmišljanje o milosti Krišne i Šila Prabhupade, koja nas je dovela zajedno kao duhovne generale da bismo ih služili, bilo je nevjerojatno. Oprostili smo se posjet za posjetom, poziv za pozivom, ne želeći uistinu otpustiti jedni drugi, već se povezati na dubljoj razini. Pitao sam se zašto ne može uvijek biti tako. Primio sam posjete, pozive i pisma od učenika diljem svijeta. Bilo je prekrasno dijeliti duboke ljubavne osjećaje. Pričali smo o našim zabavama i druženju. Zajedno smo se smijali i plakali. Moje riječi i pisma doprli su duboko u njihova srca, a njihove molitve pune ljubavi ušle su duboko u odaje moga, odakle nikada neće otići. Kao da smo po prvi put otkrili međusobnu milinu i ljubav, ne znajući hoće li smrt uskoro doći. Iako smo se oprostili, zapravo smo se željeli povezati na dubljoj razini, ne želeći uistinu se rastati. Pitao sam se zašto ne može uvijek tako biti. Družimo se s mnogim osobama i ta su druženja uvijek bila divna, ali ih često počinjemo sve više cijeniti tek u trenucima tragedije, naglih promjena ili snažnih izazova u vlastitom ili tuđem životu. Mnoge takve promjene izazvale su nama osjećaj kao da nam je to prvi zajednički susret koji otkriva novu ljepotu i radost. Upravo se u trenucima rastanka povezujemo na dubljoj razini nego li prije. Znanost o vipralambi, snažnoj ljubavi u odvojenosti, nevjerovatna je. Ako smo pažljivi i zahvalni u trenucima koji provodimo s voljenima, svaki trenutak može biti isto toliko moćan kao duboka povezanost koju osjećamo u očekivanju rastanka. Dok se pitam zašto ne može uvijek tako biti, ja, prosjak, sada znam da u stvari uvijek može biti tako. Vi i ja možemo to ostvariti tako da se uvijek opraštamo u svome umu, ne želeći se uistinu oprostiti, ali doživljavajući svaki trenutak kao da je možda posljednji. Bhakti Tirtha Swami Ki Jai. Da, ovo je baš nekako njegova indikacija i uputa da baš ponekako mislimo jedni na druge, volimo jedni druge u odnosu, budemo jedni za druge u odnosu i živimo taj život baš tako ispunjen. I ne samo da radimo službu i baš ovo što je Dananđaja spomenuo, nego zaista da poželimo Radu i Krišnu, da i poželimo upoznat, da i poželimo voljet, da i poželimo dostić. Ja se stvarno sjećam i u Sarajevu kad smo slavili njegove Vjasa puđe, obično je to tako pršti od te duhovne energije, ta njegova zaista intenzivna duhovna snaga toliko dotakne svakoga i svi onda odjednom više nije ni bitno, svi odjednom jedva čekaju da nešto uradi za nekog drugog.